Everything I said was heresy anyway, so.
At this point, we're in 2 Chronicles 9. It's really good. All right, so. So more than likely, that's kind of the deal, okay? So they're heading over there. So now we've got a godly man from Bethlehem going to Moab. Tell me about Moab. What's that place like? Godly? New? Okay, worship which god? Chemosh, remember that god? Right? Filthy McNasty, I think is how we described him. Okay? So, bad deal. So, this godly man is trying to make a good decision to save his family, to ward off the famine. Okay? Verse 2, the name of the man was Elimelech. Okay? What does Elimelech mean? Anybody got a note on that? My God is king, right? So, yay, I trust in my God. So, I'm not going to pray. I'm going to go to a pagan land to find food. Okay? So, some interesting word pictures again of what's going on. So you don't see Elimelech pray. You don't see him ask God, should he leave? God, will you provide food? He leaves and goes to a pagan country, okay? So that his wife and his kids will survive, okay? He's got a wife by the name of Naomi. What's Naomi mean? Pleasant, okay? So remember that because her name's going to change and it won't mean pleasant, okay? And the names of their two sons are Mahlon and Chilion, okay? Which mean either sick and dying, or puny and pining. So not good regardless, okay? These guys are, they're named like, you know, disease-infested skinny kid, and, right, it's just, it's not a good picture, okay? We're going to see, by the way, if we get there today, there is a kid named Ichabod. He is the son of Phinehas, and his name literally means the glory of God has departed. So, like, specifically in these times, the kids were named after the conditions of what's happening in Israel. So puny and pining literally means we've been in famine. We are starving. Our kids are like rail thin. You can see their ribs. It's kind of that type of deal, okay? We're going to see the spiritual condition in Israel so bad that Phinehas names his kid, God has left the building, okay? That's the idea. So these are Ephrathites, okay, they are a family within Bethlehem, okay, and they go to Moab now to find life. And what do they find in verse 3?
But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons.
Now, why did Elimelech go to Moab? To live, right? And what does he do as soon as he gets there? He dies, okay? So you see, again, the sovereign hand of God playing out these situations. So the very thing that he left is the spiritual leader of his home to try to go take care of his wife and his two sons. They immediately die, okay? Verse 4, now as a result of them being in a pagan land and hanging out with pagan women, what happens?
These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. They lived there
about 10 years. All right, so these guys that are from a godly heritage of some sort end up marrying pagan women. We clearly know that in Scripture that is not okay. God is not happy with that. That is not his desired will, okay? So Orpah, by the way, comes from the word that means obstinate or stubborn. It literally means like the back of your neck. So not a good description of when your wife's name is pain in the neck. That's not good. And then Ruth means companion. Or special friend, okay? So obviously we're going to learn a lot about Ruth, but just remember her background. She is a Moabite. She is from a place that worships Chemosh, and that is her, that's what we know about her. Okay, now we're going to see obviously a beautiful different side of Ruth, but that's their background. So we got two guys from a godly lineage that have both married pagan women. They are there 10 years and married. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also die. So puny and pining die, right? Because of the famine, apparently, or maybe the judgment of God. For whatever reason, we see the dad and now the two sons are all dead within a 10-year period. Okay, you see God's hand upon this. Naomi's still alive. Ruth is alive. Orpah is alive, but all the men are dead, okay, within a 10-year period of time, okay? And you notice that the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. So she has obviously now both of her sons and her husband are dead. So for Naomi, that's tough. What else do neither Ruth or Orpah have at this point after being married for 10 years? No kids. Okay. Guesstimate why that would be. What would you suppose? She's barren. Why is she barren?
Yeah, it wasn't super happy.
It's not happening. You shut off the valve of blessing. Okay, so you get an idea of the spiritual picture of the first just five verses of Ruth. It's not good, right? The people are in disobedience. God has said, great, I'm shutting it off. We're at the bottom end of that cycle where, man, if you want to go worship other gods, knock yourself out. So God's kind of got hands off the steering wheel at this point and said, when you cry out to me, then maybe I'll choose to bless you or to get you out of the situation that you put yourself in. But until then, no. Okay? So, bad situation. So, lots to be said maybe about Elimelech, who, boy, is a spiritual leader. He did not do so well. His two sons are dead. He's left his wife with a ton of responsibility and has just weighted her down. Okay? Now, verse 6, let's see what they're going to do now.
And she arose with her daughters-in-law to return to the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food.
So this may be the first good decision in the book. We're going to leave this pagan place, and we're going to go back to home. Now, her motivation is what? Food, right? So, okay, it is what it is, but she's going to try to get back home. She tells her daughters-in-law, that's where we're going to head, okay? Verse 7, keep going, Mo.
So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go, return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept.
All right, so why would Naomi send her two daughters-in-law back to Moab and say, stay. Go back to the homes of your husband. Stay here in your hometown. Stay here. Yeah, potentially, right? So now they're both married, and then, again, I hate it's a rough term, but it is what it is. They are viewed upon in this society as damaged goods, right? They are married. They are widowed. It's not someone's first choice, but at least maybe your husband's father could provide for you, or you'd be in that home, or you'd be taken in. It's a better chance for survival. So Naomi realizes she's rolling the dice a little bit. She doesn't have a lot to go home to, right? There's no husband waiting at home that's been, you know, making money hand over fist or whatever. She doesn't have much. So she's saying, this is the riskier route is to go with me. So you guys stay at home. You'll get taken care of, even in your culture, okay? So they weep together. And they said to her, no, but we shall surely return to you, right? That's the, no, we'll go, but we don't really want to go, but we're going to say we want to go, right? Naomi said, no, return my daughters. Why would you go with me? Have I yet sons in the womb that they may be your husbands? Meaning, I have nothing for you. I don't have like a kinsman redeemer waiting for you. I don't have a set of sons coming out of my womb that now that my first sons are dead, you can marry. Like, there's nothing here for you, okay? Return my daughters. I'm too old to have a husband. There's nothing here. Go back home, marry them, okay? And then she makes a very interesting comment at the end of verse 13. She says, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. Now, who got her in this situation to begin with? Her husband, Elimelech, right? Who said, we're going to leave Bethlehem, we're going to go to Moab, we're going to find food in the famine. It obviously didn't happen. Their lives got worse, not better. So who does Naomi point her finger at? God. Okay, why? Naomi gets a really bad rap, I think. And I think maybe it's not quite as deserved as we give her. So tell me about Naomi's theology. God's in charge, right? Elimelech's a bonehead, and he made a bad decision. But at the end of the day, my God's in charge, right? And he has his hand against me. Driscoll mentions in his sermon, there's a Puritan by the name of John Flavel, okay, so old school dude, who calls this sanctified affliction, meaning God is in control and he is intentionally withholding blessing from me, or how does he phrase it? I'm looking at my notes. But that's kind of how he describes it. So it's the idea of she believes that God is in control and has put her in this difficult situation for her growth and for her ability to whatever. But it's God at the end of the day who's in charge of that. Okay, this is a similar picture of Joseph sitting in a dungeon. And then we don't see him or maybe see Naomi with the same maybe half full version of life that Joseph had, but it's the same idea. My God's in control. Why is that so important in a season like this for Naomi?
She's nothing.
Yeah, right? And what do you have to believe in the midst of this? Like, your life in the last 10 years has gone to pot. It's awful. Why do you have to believe in these moments that God's in control? There's no hope without it, right? I mean, this is a big accident, and it's just random. Like, that's your explanation? Like, how do you climb out of that hole if you don't have a sovereign God that's good and that loves you? And he's allowing you to be here for a reason, right? So, I think I've told you guys this story before, but there was a gal that taught the program that my wife went through. So I went through a program similar to this. It was all guys, and then they had a similar program at our church that was all girls, okay? They didn't like us mixing together for whatever. We couldn't dance, and it was... Anyway, this gal had cancer, right? And she said she just hit rock bottom. She had terminal cancer. And she said in those moments, like when you are at the bottom of that of your barrel in life and whatever, she said it's your theology that carries you through. And she says it's in those moments that I have to believe that God is in control. This isn't an accident. I'm here for a reason. And this is where God has me, right? You cannot get by with life saying, yeah, God is off the throne. It's yin and yang is beating whatever today. Like, it just, that does not give you any comfort in the midst of pain, okay? And not that it makes your situation any better, but to know that a good, benevolent God is in control is absolutely necessary. So I think to Naomi's credit, she's there. Now, she's got her downsides too, but, you know, I at least appreciate her gut-level honesty with her situation, and we'll see more of that throughout the book, okay? So God's hand is against me. It's not Elimelech's fault. We are here for a reason, okay? They lift up their voices. They weep. Orpah says, I'm out, okay? Go back to your people and her gods and return to your sister-in-law. But Ruth, verse 16, has a very different approach to this. Jane, read that. Now, that's fascinating. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. That's a pretty significant statement, okay? Why is that so significant that Ruth would say all that she does, specifically about Naomi's God? Yeah. In what? The vending machine God that's continued to deliver and bless. No, like this God has given her nothing tangibly. A dead husband, no food. I mean, her life is difficult and she worships God, okay? If you want to point to a conversion in the book of Ruth, that's it. I mean, Ruth is basically saying, I am abandoning the gods of Moab. They have done nothing for me. I'm going to trust in your God, even though it's not because it's like, sunshine and rainbows and everything's great. Like, that's not the world that they're living in. It's dark. They are hungry. They're without kids, without husbands. They are two bitter, leftover women that have not a whole lot of life in front of them. And she says, I still want to worship your God. That is a great act of faith, okay? There are only three non-Jews, by the way, in our Bible that make statements like this. One is Ruth, one is Rahab, who we've already studied, and the other is Naaman in 2 Kings, and we'll get to him, who has a conversion like this that is just extraordinary, that they say, though I come from this other land that worships other gods, I am going to worship Israel's God, and it's that clear and plain that they say, that's my guy, okay? So we'll look at Naaman in the midst of the Elisha story, okay? So pretty cool.
Another credit to Naomi, too, because who'd she learn that from?
Absolutely. In a pagan land, right, there was Elimelech, who's dead. Their two, you know, husbands who were, you know, who knows where they were, but they were there 10 years. But yeah, it's Naomi who was the model of faith, if you will. So for sure, good observation, okay?
And it's good to see that Naomi was honest with God in verse 13. Because sometimes today we give off this, like, everything's going to be fine, and, you know,
yep.
Which is not. But having Naomi be honest, she was like, oh, she can still be honest to her God.
Yeah.
You know, and be real. And
yeah, I mean, 100 times out of 100, I'd rather have that response than someone that's like, it's all good.
Yeah.
I called a guy yesterday that I've actually never met. We have like a mutual friend, and I was trying to give him some stuff from off the front. Anyway, I call him on the phone, and I'm like, hey, man, how you doing? Like, just a let's get the business conversation. And he's like, oh, pretty terrible. And I'm like, he's like, man, I'm sorry. He's like, you wanted a, yeah, great response and move on and get to what, you know, the point of the conversation. And the guy goes to the well at Fig, and I'm like, you know what? I appreciate that. I said, man, how are you doing, honestly? And it led us into this conversation of, here's what's going on in your life. And I'm like, man, I appreciate you sharing that. Like, he was just, wasn't like, woe is me and life's awful. But he's like, you know, no, it kind of sucks right now. And this is why. And I got this going on and this going on and this going on. And like, the water line's like, I think here, actually. And I'm just trying to get my face back above it. And I thought, you know what? Good for you. Like, that's an honest response. You know, and he wasn't in this downward spiral of like life's over or anything like that. But he's like, yeah, just I've had better days, right? And you called me and that's my response. I thought, ah, good for you. So I appreciate that. Now, if people are Eeyores about it and it's always raining on you and nobody else, then there's a point where you're like, okay, you got to pull up out of this tailspin that you're in. But Naomi's going to get there. That is not her throughout the rest of the book. She is very honest with God. You know, David's like that. That's why we love the Psalms. It's like, you know, I want to kill my enemies and crush their teeth. And you're like, wow, okay. You know, and how long will you forget me, God, forever? And it's like, man, that's how he felt. So it's good. Okay. So we see Ruth's conversion right there in 16 and 17. Verse 18, when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. So Naomi says, realizes that, okay, she's all in and I'm not going to convince her otherwise. So they're going to go back to Jerusalem, okay, back to Bethlehem, I should say. Okay, 19 and following, let's pick up there.
So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, is this Naomi?
And they had to be like, hey, didn't you leave with your husband and two kids? Now you're coming back with this Moabite woman? Where's your husband? Where are your kids? They're all dead. Like, oh, hey, Naomi. Like, awkward.
Would you be able to tell that Ruth was different?
In terms of?
Like, how she looked?
Probably not. They would have been externally pretty similar in terms of dark hair, dark complexion. So no, probably not a ton. Maybe dress, if they were still that way, you could tell. There will be some people that are like, who's that? Like, I haven't seen her before, so we'll see that. But in terms of facial features and stuff, no, they'd be pretty similar. So she says, it's me, right? And it's rough. So, and she says verse 20, I mean, here's again, gut level honesty from Naomi.
Said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me.
Okay, what does Mara mean? It means bitter, right? So she's like, that's my name. Like, that's kind of where I'm at in life right now. It stinks. Okay, so she's gone from pleasant or sweet to bitter. I mean, that's the opposite end of that spectrum, okay? Don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara, because I am bitter. God has dealt bitterly with me, okay? I went out in full, but the Lord has brought me back empty, meaning at least I had a husband and two kids. I was hungry, but I had a whole lot more. Now I'm coming back with Ruth. Like, love you, mean it, but, right? I can't provide for her. She's kind of like weight to me, honestly. Like, it had been better had she stayed at home and at least had someone else have to care for her. Now she's my responsibility. So that's just a rough picture, right? And she's got nothing to offer, okay? Verse 22, Naomi returned with her and Ruth. They went from the land of Moab. They are now in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest, okay? So again, it just so happens providentially, right, that God took them out of Bethlehem in this time of the famine, takes them to Moab. They come back. They just so happen to come in at the time of the harvest. So what's going on right now? What's different about Bethlehem is compared to when they left? There's food and they're harvesting food. Like, they came in at the perfect time. Okay. So chapter 2, let's see why this is so important. All right, what's Boaz mean? Strength, okay? His name means strength. So you're going to get a very good picture of who Boaz is, even by his name. Outward strength, inward strength, strength with God. He is a solid guy. More than likely, much older than Ruth, Okay? So Ruth is probably 10 years married. We're talking about late 20s, maybe early 30s. Boaz is probably easily 50, maybe upward, okay? So you talk about robbing the cradle, we all know what's going to happen. This guy's older, okay? And he's been a faithful single guy for a long time, but he is not a... you're going to see him surprised that there's even any interest in Ruth towards him. He's going, why would you go after me when you can go after younger men? Like, this doesn't make sense, okay? So Ruth is going to see beyond the external and beyond just the years and realize, no, this guy's got a lot to offer. And he does, okay? He's a solid guy, okay? Now, here is her request, verse 2.
And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter.
Okay, so verse 2, what does Ruth ask? To glean, okay? And what does that mean? We've talked about this concept before. Yeah, so in Israel, you had square fields, right? We talked about this, okay? When you harvested, you would harvest like this, okay? This stuff was what was left over to glean. Now, tell me about the welfare system in Israel. How does it work?
You have to work.
You got to work, right? So it's there, but you've got to go get it, okay? Often how God works in our lives. Like, yeah, I'll bless you, but Joshua, you still have to go into battle. You still have to go accomplish this. So there's dignity involved in that, right? There's not a handout line. It's like, no, I'm going to go work for it. I'm going to go pick. So there's it's interesting the way that God designed it, that there's a sense of you can maintain your pride even in this system. So, I mean, this is a rough spot if you think about it. They're begging for food. Ruth is begging for food in a foreign land, right? So that's a hard place. She's not even home. You know, she's in a tough spot.
So is this kind of why, like, the people that Jesus heals that are, like, blind and crippled, they can't do that?
Yeah, many of these people don't have the ability. Yep. So that's probably even a step lower than where they're at. So why isn't Naomi with her, by the way? Probably too old, maybe mourning, but probably because she's not able, right? So Ruth's got to go on behalf of not just her, but now her mother-in-law, right? So, okay, and what does she pray in verse 2? You see kind of just a veiled prayer there in verse 2. Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. What is she hoping for? Somebody needs to favor me. Somebody needs to give me grace, okay? The same word that we saw used last chapter, the word chesed, right? Naomi said, go return each of you, 1 verse 8, to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you. She's asking for that same kindness. God, I need you to orchestrate events in such a way that I'm going to go walk into a field and I need someone to favor me that has no business favoring me. I need your hand to just kind of line it up. So that's what she's asking. And Ruth says to her, or Naomi says to Ruth rather, go. Okay, verse 3, read that. How does yours read? And it turned out. Mine says, and she happened to come. Now, did she happen to come? Did it just turn out? No. God is the master puppeteer, is directing her steps and puts her in this field at this time for this reason to answer the prayer that she utters a verse earlier that somebody would give her favor. Okay? Remember this, guys, in life, there are no accidents in terms of stuff like this. God directs, and that direction is just as sovereign and as miraculous as if he had parted the Red Sea. We just don't get to see sometimes the splendor and the miracles behind it, but God is leading her. So she's praying, God, I need something. Guide my steps, and now I'm going to start walking, and I hope I go the right way. So she's confident that God will, and it just so happens that she ends up in this guy's field. Now, we don't know Boaz yet from a hole in our head, but knowing the rest of the story, this is exactly where she needs to be, okay? So in the midst of difficulty, she's going to roll into this guy's land, Boaz, who is from the family of Elimelech. So what do we learn about him immediately? Who's Elimelech? Yeah, he's related to Naomi, okay? So he's in the family tree. He's family somewhere, okay? Thankfully not too close, but he's family. All right, verse 4, keep going.
Just then, Boaz arrives from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they called back.
Just so happens that Boaz shows up, just as Ruth walks in the field, okay? And what does he say there, Jane? Keep going in 5. Right, like you know your fields, okay? The idea is he probably has lots and he's probably moving between them during harvest time to make sure his workers are taking care of business. And he realizes, that's a foreigner in my field. I've never seen her. Who is that? Okay, so he takes notice of her immediately. Keep going in 6.
The foreman replied, she is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi.
Okay, so her reputation's already out there. She's identified as a Moabite woman, right? Yeah, she rolled into town last week and there was quite a stir when Naomi comes into town without her two kids and her husband, and she brings back this Moabite woman. Weird, right? Pete, did you have a thought?
That, you know, all the dudes knew like who she was.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to see, I think Boaz may have caught on to that as well. You'll see a statement that you're like, smart guy, okay? Let's keep reading, okay? You never know what's going to come out of my mouth. Keep going, Jay.
She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She went into the field and she worked 7 days from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter.
Okay, so how do you notice, just first of all, how does she treat Boaz's crew? Respectfully, please let me go do this. May I have your permission, right? So you see something in just the way that she handles other people that you go, I like that. What else do you notice about her immediately in verse 7? She works hard, right? Proverbs 31 talks about a hardworking woman and that being attractive, and it is. So this is a gal that's not afraid to roll up her sleeves and to get her hands dirty, okay? Now, in this culture, when you are outside and sunburned, or not even sunburned, but tan, it had the very opposite effect that it has in our culture, right? To be elite meant to be pasty white or pale skin because that meant you were inside. That means that you were taken care of. If you're outside, you guys remember Solomon's interaction with his bride. She says, I've been out there with my brothers baking in the sun. My skin is tan. That's not viewed on as good. In our culture, it can be. But pasty white was the look, apparently, in that day. Okay, so I got that going on really good. That's not something that she would necessarily be proud of. So she would have been looked upon as maybe less than or what have you because of that, okay? But she's a hardworking gal, okay? So there's a lot of qualities that you see in Ruth that you go, man, I like that, right? Now, verse 8, fellas, single fellas specifically, take note.
So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and drink from the water jars the men have filled.
All right, so what does Boaz do in verse 8? He's in charge. He's allowed her to be there. He's found out from his servants, this is Ruth. Okay, there's not even really the beginning of a relationship yet, but he's noticed her. And what does he do in 8? Lets her stay, lets her come out, okay? Give me an I word for that, what the man is doing in the relationship. Initiating. He takes the reins of the relationship and says, you can do these things, okay? I am initiating the next step in our relationship. I'm kind of setting the boundaries if you're okay with that, okay? So Boaz is not passive. He is active. He is leading in the midst of this, okay? That, by the way, guys, is very attractive to a woman, okay? When you say, I would like to do this. Is that okay? These are where I would like, this is where I would like our relationship to head. If you're okay with that, okay? He's not forcing himself upon her or saying, you're going to follow me. He's saying, no, I would like to bless you. I would like this to be the nature of how we're going to interact. Are you okay with that? I've done these things in preparation. I've told my servants, Pete, by the way, don't touch her, right? Like maybe he saw something, leave her alone. Feet are water, but hands off. Okay, so you're protected. You don't have to worry about, you know, maybe I got some guys a little shady working in my field. I don't know. Probably not. But the idea is you're safe here. Okay, you're a young woman. Naomi's at home. No one around you knows you. I know you, and I have protected you. There's water for you to drink. There's food for you to get. He's initiated, okay? So now, what else is cool about this is I don't think Boaz had any false motives at this point. This isn't, man, she is hot, and I want to, you know, there's no, he doesn't think that there's ever going to be a response from Ruth, so he may have noticed her and noticed her beauty, but I think these intentions are no. This is simply a gal in need, and I have the means to provide because of what God has given me, and I'm going to. And there's no expectation from her that she would return or that there would be anything else other than I'm just going to bless you, okay? Which is really cool, okay? So that's his, he begins the relationship, if you will, okay? Verse 10, this is her response. So what is Boaz's explanation as to why he's doing this?
He knows what she's
doing. Yeah, you've had a rough 10 years. It's been rough. And you needed someone that would show you favor. Exactly what you prayed, I'm that guy. So you can see maybe the dominoes beginning to line up for Ruth of God. I just prayed this. Here we are. I'm in this guy's field. He is being abundantly gracious, far beyond what I could have asked or imagined. And you see light bulbs beginning to turn on for her. And Boaz, I think, is just saying, I've heard your story. Naomi's family, you've just been through it. You've been through the ringer. So I just want to bless you, okay? And he says, may the Lord reward your work in full and your wages from the Lord. May God take care of you. By the way, he prays that God would richly bless her, right? In verse 12, may the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord. Who is going to answer that prayer? Who is God going to use to answer the prayer that Boaz prays in verse 12? Boaz. Have you ever thought about that? Driscoll makes that observation throughout the book that several times people pray prayers that they want to be the answer to. God, bless this woman with, you know, sustenance. And I'm going to be the answer to that prayer. Like, is that okay? Like, yeah, that's fine. So you see a ton of prayers in this book and people praying for things like that. And this is one where Boaz is going to answer his own prayer, right? I got a shovel. I need a hole. Let's go, right? That's his attitude. So, and you see some cool kind of word pictures in here of just how God will provide for her under God's wings. It's just a neat picture that we see repeated in Scripture, okay? Verse 13, she says, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me. Indeed, you have spoken kindly to your maidservant, and I am not like one of your maidservants, meaning I am different and you were treating me differently. I think you're seeing that initial attraction from Ruth to Boaz that I think he's not. Not that he's not there. I think he's just oblivious to the fact that anything can happen, okay? But he is leading in this relationship, and he's putting her at ease because of the way he's handling this in godliness, okay? So, 14. Let's keep going.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Was it common in this culture to, like, have a much older guy with a younger girl?
Would
that kind of be...
Yeah, no. I think that's why that's abnormal, because normally you would marry, like, again, you look at, like... Mary and Joseph, right? Mary was probably 13, maybe 15 when she had Jesus. Like, think about that. Joseph was maybe a little bit older, but these are close to like a generation apart, maybe. I mean, this is not normal. So, and it's not necessarily frowned upon either, but it's just not your normal two fathers getting together. Hey, here's my 15-year-old daughter. Well, here's my 17-year-old son. Let's have some wine. Let's seal the deal. They're engaged. Let's have a party. No. So. Yeah. Yeah. So, yep. Yeah, so, so there you go. Okay, 14, keep going.
And at meal time, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in wine. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over.
Okay, sorry. My version says she sat beside the reapers and he served her. So what is he doing? Would this be normal in that culture? For the boss to be serving a Moabite woman on his property, in his field, with his food, at his table. Like, you can see that Ruth is like, whoa, okay? And now maybe Boaz is beginning to, you know, I don't know. He's taking phenomenal care of her, okay? So you got to see from Ruth's point, she's like, wow. I mean, the questions are like, where are we going next? I mean, you can see the reality of probably what she's feeling and her heart beginning to turn towards him. And she feeds him, or he feeds rather her. She has some left over. Who do you think the leftovers would be for? Naomi, right? Boaz is smart in that, A, that's family, but if he's going to get to Ruth, who does he ultimately have to get to? You got to take care of mama, right? He's a smart guy. So if mom and dad don't like you, it don't matter, right? So that's a smart guy who's been around the block before, right? So she arose to glean. Boaz commanded his servant, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, okay? What does that mean?
The inside.
Yeah. Don't just put her on the outside. Put her in the, you know, the money crop in here. Like, let her hang out and pick the good stuff. That's fine. So, like, upgrade. So you're seeing, like, blessing upon blessing upon blessing. Like, is Ruth's prayer being answered far beyond what she ever asked or imagined? Absolutely, right? It just so happened that she wound up in the field of Boaz. Like, no, God, it didn't. Like, you put her there, right? So it's just a beautiful story, okay? Keep going in verse 16.
And also pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean. And do not rebuke her.
What does that mean?
So there it is.
Yeah. Not only can she collect the good stuff, but you're going to collect stuff for her, bundle it up, get it ready, and she's going to take it home. Like, holy cow. And we're going to find out in 17 how much that is. Read that.
So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley.
Okay, anybody got a note on how much an ephah is? 30 to 50 pounds, okay? How long would that take, by the way, to accumulate that much barley? That's 2 weeks worth of labor, okay? This is a $2,000. Here you go. That is a lot of cash. That is a big gift. Take this home to Naomi. Let her know that I mean business, okay? I'm not messing around. This isn't a man boasting of his gifts and doing nothing. This is a man that says, no, I have the means, I have the ability. Here's a down payment, if you will. I'm demonstrating my faithfulness in this way. So maybe things are starting to move forward, okay? And this is a cool picture in the midst of the story of, like, he is beginning to move forward with her in the sense that he's maybe hoping, or I don't know what's going on inside him, but he still doesn't quite think this is going to happen per se, but yet he's certainly blessing her with sustenance. Okay, so that's 2 weeks of paid stuff that she did not earn or deserve. And who's hiking that 30 to 50 pounds home? She is. Okay, she's a strong gal. You know, maybe a servant, but she is not some weak sauce sissy girl. Okay, so that's very attractive. Okay, 18. Keep going.
And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today, and where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you.
Okay, now notice what she asked. What does Naomi ask specifically? You see it twice. Where? Okay, here is Ruth's answer. Keep going to 19.
So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz.
She asks where. Ruth answers who. Twice, okay? It's not important where. The who is important, right? So fascinating that God led me not to this field. God led me to this man, okay? Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness, his chesed, from the living into the dead. Again, Naomi said to her, this man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. Okay, so for the first time in the book, Naomi realizes that's Boaz. He's family. In fact, he is a kinsman redeemer. He is a goel, is the word in the Hebrew there, which literally means he has the ability to redeem her. According to Leviticus 25, when your husband would die, you look at the next closest kinsman redeemer, and that person can redeem that woman to bring her and her family and all that is with her in her land into his clan to take care of her. So, like, this is the sovereign hand of God moving beyond belief at this point. It just so happened, right? So, again, fascinating that this is how all this would end up. So we find out that he is not the closest relative, but he's number two on the scale. So there's somebody else that's closer and has rights to Naomi and Ruth in their land before they do, but he's in line, okay? 21, keep going.
And Ruth the Moabite said, besides, he said to me, you shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.
Okay, so we've got 6 or 7 weeks left of harvest. So he's basically said, you've got a backstage pass for 3 months, 2 to 3 months, to come get all the food that you need. That amount of food would have supplied them probably for close to a year. So he's saying, come hang out with me. You're going to make 60 grand with me in 6 weeks, and you're going to be taken care of for the rest of the year. Like, dang, right? This is a really, really big deal. So within 1 day, Ruth's prayer of God, please put me somewhere where someone's going to find favor and show me favor, that's all been answered, okay? So she comes back day one on the job, and it's been a good day, okay? Naomi said to Ruth, it is good, my daughter, that you go out to his that you go out with his maid so that others do not fall upon you in another field. So keep doing what you're doing is what she says. She said, stay close to the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So keep doing what you're doing. Go out and hang out with Boaz. All this is good, okay? Now, chapter 3, verse 1. Let's continue.
Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz a relative with whose young women you work? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor.
All right, so a little bit of context. We are at the end of the harvest, okay? We've seen no more interaction between those two. So we've got 6 to 7 weeks of Ruth going out. She's harvesting grain. They're seeing each other. Hey, Boaz. Hey, Ruth. And grab my stuff and go home and eat. And it's all good, but we're not seeing the relationship progress. Like, we saw this initial, like, holy cow, like, this is great. And that's it, right? So nothing else has happened that at least the author records for us. It's the end of harvest now. So what is Naomi realizing? Like, this natural thing that put the two of you together day in and day out, it's about to go away, and then what's going to happen? We're going to lose our opportunity. So she's going to force her issue a little bit, okay? Chapter 3, by the way, is a really weird chapter, okay? So just to put that out there, there's lots of different ways to interpret this. It's weird, okay? So now, if you're a gal, okay, and you are interested in a guy and are looking for guidance and advice as a young woman, who do you want in your life right now? Older woman. Older woman or dad? Dad, how do I handle this? What do I do? What's he like? Lead in this for me. Set up this, right? You want the protection of a father. What does Ruth not have? She's nobody. She has Naomi, right? She doesn't have a dad to lead, a dad to protect her and say, that guy's trouble. No. This guy, I like this guy. Let's have him over and, you know, have some hummus and see how it goes, right? That was dad's job, but dad's not in the picture, okay? So you get Naomi, and Naomi's going to be edgy to say the least, okay? So I don't know that I would recommend her advice to any of you. In fact, I wouldn't, for sure. And I'm certainly not going to recommend this to my daughters, but this is the advice that she gives, okay? So verse 3, here you go.
Wash therefore and anoint yourself and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking.
All right, so it's the end of barley harvest. What's the picture at the threshing floor right now? You guys know a little bit of the backstory on these. You've just brought in your entire crop. It's been bountiful. What are you doing? You're having a party. You're celebrating. You're drinking wine. You're hanging out. It's great, right? We just brought in our crop. God provided. This is good. It's a celebration, okay? There's lots of drinking. There's an excess of drinking at times. It's mentioned in, I think it's Hosea, that oftentimes harlots would come to the threshing floor because they knew we got men with a lot of money in their pocket. They've just gotten all their grain and their harvest, and we're going to send prostitutes over there. So some of the picture of what's happening in there isn't so good, okay? That's not the case with Boaz. He's a godly guy, and we're going to see that here in a minute. But that's the picture of what's happening. This is a celebration, okay? So what is Naomi's advice to Ruth in verse 3? Go to the party. How specifically? Yeah, get pretty. Get dressed up. Take a shower. Put your nice clothes on. Look attractive. How has she looked up to this point? Sweaty, right? Working in the field, which, again, is odd that a gal would think that that's attractive, but to guys, that is attractive. This is a different kind of attractive. So she's demonstrated, I'm a hardworking woman, but man, I have not come with the idea of, you know, I'm in my grungies. Now she's like, I'm going to get dressed up, and I'm going to come, and let's just see what happens. So if I can turn Boaz's head, I'm going to, okay? So that was the advice that she's given. Now, is that wrong, ladies, to look nice, to put yourself in the presence of godly men, and to put your best foot forward? Not at all, okay? Highly recommend that, okay? Now, as a dad, I would say let's make sure that's in the right environment, okay? Let's not do that at 5 at midnight at a bar. But, man, if you want to go hang out at the 7, the restaurant as opposed to the o'clock service, right? And look nice and put yourself in the presence of godly men. Join a life group where there's going to be godly dudes and you could, like, I'm okay with that. Like, that's fine, okay? I don't know how they got the term, but my wife and her roommates in college called this throwing bricks. Like, I'll throw a brick at a guy to see if it hits him and be like, oh, hey, you know, like, hey, over here, it was me. You know, like, I'm not going to ask him out, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to let him know that I'm here. And in case he can't see me, I'll hit him with a brick, you know, to make sure he's like, oh, got it, okay? So, ladies, that's fine. So if you know where the godly guys hang out, take the first step and put yourself in that situation. Be in the right environment. That's great, okay? Get your pretty on, whatever it is. Go do it, okay? Put your best foot forward, okay? Now, verse 4, this is the part that I'd say, not so much, okay? Verse 4.
But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do.
Like, wow, like, what does that mean? Like, that's just creepy, right? Okay, multiple problems with this, right? So it's night. The idea is there's probably some secrecy. Now, why would Boaz be sleeping next to his grain?
To protect it,
right? And everybody's sleeping next to theirs. There's a big party. There's harlots out there. You're sleeping next to your grain. She says, Ruth, when you get there, go uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what you shall do, okay? The half-empty version of that is the word feet is often used as a euphemism for sexual organs. So go uncover him, lie down next to him, and he'll tell you what to do from there. You're like, oh gosh, is this what we're talking about? Maybe. I mean, Scripture gives lots of room for that to be the correct interpretation. Possibly, okay? Let's kind of see how it unfolds, but that is a very real possibility of what Naomi is advising. He's a kinsman. Go dress up. Go lay down next to him. He's had a couple glasses of wine. He's in a great mood. Okay, verse 6, keep going. Verse 5. It's here. This is Scripture, okay? Ruth's going down with it. Okay, right, here we go. So,
and when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet.
Now, I think this literally is, like, she's laying down at his feet. He wakes up and is like, oh my gosh, like, he's startled. Okay, and he's not, Boaz isn't hammered, he's not drunk, but he's had some wine. He's, you know, the edge is off. In verse 9, now here comes the conversation.
He said, who are you? She answered, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer.
Okay, now this has multiple meanings as well, okay? This could literally mean, come underneath your covers, right, and let's see what happens next. This could mean, oftentimes that idea of covering is like, it's the same idea of an engagement ring, okay? In Scripture, Malachi, I think it's 2:16, talks about the wrong side of that when you cover somebody and don't take care of them. The idea that you're engaged, you're betrothed to somebody, and that you don't fulfill your duties, that is wrong. So she could be asking to, like, let's seal the deal. Let's get engaged. Like, we've been around each other, and I don't know if you know that I'm interested, but I'm interested, so I am going all in. I'm putting all my poker chips on the table, and I want you to ask me to marry you. I think that's kind of where the scripture can go as well, okay? Based on his response and the way that he handles it, I don't know what Ruth's intentions are, but I think she was willing to go wherever Boaz wanted to go, okay? So this is it's a weird chapter, right? She's a Moabite. Morality is different, okay? Let me paint it like this. I've talked to several guys that I know in the midst of very godly, Christian, God-honoring relationships. And I have heard multiple wives say to their husbands, had you asked before marriage, I would have. Not because, like, I don't walk with God or I don't love God, but I was that committed to you, and I know, like, that would have been a struggle. So please don't push that type of thing. I mean, those were conversations later, but that's not abnormal. And I think had Boaz said, let's seal the deal, I think Ruth would have said, game on, let's, okay? So thankfully, Boaz is called to lead, okay? How about Song of Solomon? How many times does the bride ask basically to full-on sleep with Solomon before their wedding? I think it's 3 different times. And Solomon says, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. And then they get in the bedroom and he says, bring it. Come, O north wind. It's like, it's on now. There's a time and there's a place, but she has a desire. She puts herself forward and it's the guy that pulls the e-brake and says, no. Okay. So fellas, another note. Okay. Whatever is going on here, Boaz is the one that clearly puts it in the right context and says, Ruth, I'm not sure what you had in mind, but this is where we're going, so this is not going to happen. And he doesn't accuse her of that. He just says, okay, this is the road we're going to head down now. So if you thought I was going to sleep with you, I'm not. This is where we're going to go. And that's the guy's job, biblically in a relationship, to lead emotionally, to lead physically, to lead spiritually. It's not the gal's job to do that. Now, it's also not her job to manipulate the situation and to see how many of the guy's buttons she can push to figure out if they can go there. But Ruth is, unfortunately, I think to some degree, based on maybe not the best counsel from Naomi, but that's where they're at, okay? So she lays down next to him. He's in a very vulnerable situation. They have a sense of privacy. He's a little bit tipsy. Here's this beautiful younger woman that he knows, and boy, it's just it's the perfect storm, if you will, okay? Verse 10, let's see how he handles it.
And he said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, and that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich.
So you see what's implied in that? What does he assume that Ruth's going to do? Find a younger guy. Like, I didn't think that I would be an option, but holy cow, I am. Like, wow, like I was kind to you and it was a blessing for me and the kindness that you've showed me. I didn't know that this was, wow, we're here. And now he's like, light bulbs are going off.
So I'm confused about the whole kinsman redeemer thing. Did the girl have to ask for it to happen?
Not necessarily, but I think Ruth, I think Boaz assumed that there would be someone else that would, A, he wasn't first in line. So there was someone else before him. Even with that, that there would be someone that would still want to marry Ruth. So he hasn't stepped in and done anything yet.
Kinsman Redeemer isn't like, that's your option when your husband dies, you could get remarried?
You could, yeah. Okay. Unlikely. And if you didn't, it was the job of the first Kinsman Redeemer to do that. So this other guy that we're going to meet in chapter 4 has not done that. So it wasn't even Boaz's job. Okay, he was second in line. There was someone else that should have stepped up and handled the situation already had she not gotten married to someone else. And the idea is in Israel, you're not going to get remarried. Like, that's just not normal in that culture.
So wouldn't Naomi have been the one to be redeemed? Because she was...
She's too old. She's past childbearing years. So it's like...
Okay, so you get redeemed to have more kids?
Right, to raise up a family. So
so if a really old woman, her husband died, she was just out of luck?
Basically. Now, but if you already had kids, then you're good. You have a name going on. Now, Naomi doesn't because her two kids are dead. So what is her hope in? Kids. She can't have kids. So her hope's in Ruth getting redeemed so that she has... You with me? So that is her redemption, okay? So yeah, she is apparently past childbearing age. She's not in the fields working. You kind of get the idea that she's probably at home and, you know, not able, okay? So her hope is in Ruth, okay? So... So again, Boaz, I think, is surprised, but grateful. Verse 11, keep going.
And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman.
Okay, listen to how he turns the conversation, okay? I will do for you whatever you ask. What did she just ask of him? Before that. You with me? But he turns it, and he says, I will do exactly what you ask. I don't really know what you meant by uncover my feet and hang out and let's see what happens, but I know that you are a woman of character. So he immediately mentions everyone around knows who you are in terms of your character. He's lifting up the conversation. He's saying, I will do what you ask, which is ultimately redemption. That's not going to happen here. That's going to happen somewhere else, meaning I need to go redeem you. I need to marry you, okay? And that's not what we're here to do, okay? So he turns it and leads, and even in a spot of... vulnerability. I like how Boaz responds. Okay, so she may have asked one thing. He assumes the half full version based on her character. So if I had to lean one way or the other, I'm like 49% shady, 51%. Maybe she was half full. I don't know. But regardless, here they are. And Boaz is stepping up to the plate. Okay, verse 12. Okay, so I'm second in line. There's another person that has first rights to you, okay? So here's what he's going to do.
Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning.
Okay, so there's somebody else. I've got the desire, okay? I want to, but we've got to figure out what the situation with this other guy, okay? So kind of a three-part deal to be a kinsman redeemer. Number one, you have to be in line. You got to be a relative. Secondly, you have to have the financial ability to do so, okay? So to take on Ruth, what else does that mean for a kinsman redeemer? Who else are you getting? Naomi. Package deal, right? You're getting Naomi, and you're getting what else? Two sons are dead. No.
So
the land, okay? Meaning you have to have the ability to take care of that land, okay? So financially, where do you need to be to do this? You need to be doing okay, right? This isn't some 32-year-old living in his mom's basement, right? This is someone that has means. He may not be loaded. I think Boaz is actually, he's probably loaded, okay? But he's a responsible male with a job, right? He's independent. He can take care of himself. He pays his own car insurance. I mean, that's kind of the idea. So we're going to find out the reason that this other guy can't redeem him is he's not in the financial situation that Boaz is in, okay? It'd have been too much burden financially to take upon Ruth.
Would it be inconvenient to have their land if it was, like, far away from his?
Potentially, yeah.
Because he'd have to, like, travel back and forth.
Yep, if that land is in another area, it would have been. Because they're family, they're still within the same tribal allotment. So it's not like we're talking about Dan and Beersheba or whatever. I mean, we're talking about within their tribal lands. But yeah, the land certainly would have been an obligation. You got to take care of it, and it takes money to make money type deal. So yeah.
What were the three parts again?
A relative, financial, which I didn't, sorry to mention the third, the ability to do it, and the third is the desire, okay? The other guy in line is going to have one in three. He's going to have, he is a relative, we know. He certainly has the desire. He's not going to have the financial wherewithal to make it happen, okay? And that's where he's going to say, oh, okay, okay? So what does Boaz say? How long is this going to take? Not long, okay? We're going to figure this out now, okay? Remain here this night. When morning comes, if he will redeem you, great. If not, I will. So he's expressed, hey, you want to get engaged? I also want to get engaged. We're on the same page. Like, when? However, we need to do this right, okay? Now, verse 14, here's why I'm 51%, okay? Read that. So what does he say to her? Stay here until morning, and then what? Leave. Before people see you. Okay, now that sounds shady in our context. Hey, spend the night, but then leave really early in the morning so no one knows you're here. What is he doing? He doesn't want people getting the wrong idea. He's protecting her reputation. Okay, he has her reputation at heart. Okay, so don't... stay here, but in the morning go, okay? And then he's going to, in verse 15, give her a lot of stuff to go home with as basically a down payment of what he's planning on doing to take back to Naomi to say, yes, I mean business. And he's going to give her a bunch of produce of their land to do that, okay? What does that look like today, by the way? To protect a woman's reputation in a dating relationship, what is maybe a modern day equivalent of that? Yeah, okay. Brad will tell stories of, like, and he was hypersensitive to this, and I appreciate it. He would borrow sometimes, I think it was Jen's car, and he would park his car at her place and then borrow her car, and then thought, you know what, that probably doesn't look like above board because now my car is parked in front of her house all night. Just to, and he's not even there, but for the sake of her integrity would say, no, we need to figure out a different way to do that where my vehicle is not parked in front of your house all night long. So if someone drives by and goes, isn't that Brad's car? It's 2 in the morning. Like, why is he here? Well, he's not here, but to protect her reputation, he's like, eh, we're not, no, that's not good. That's not healthy for her. So guys, as you think about that in terms of leading, those are the little things that matter, that protect someone's reputation, right? I used to drive my wife crazy, but I said, listen, at 10 o'clock at night, I'm going home. There's nothing good happens after 10 o'clock. I'm sleepy, and I need to go home. So we'll watch the movie later. I'll pay the late fee, whatever it is. I knew myself too well, and Michelle and I did not have a perfect dating relationship in the physical sense either. It was a struggle for both of us because of both of our past. That was a normative part of a non-Christian dating relationship, and we struggled because we were both prone to want to do things that married couples are supposed to do, and that dating couples are told to turn on the dimmer switch really slowly and keep it dim until marriage, okay? So if you're there and you've been through that, man, we've all been there, okay? Guys, it's our job to protect her integrity, to think about her reputation, okay? And that's something that Ruth is ultimately... Boaz is there to do that, okay? So again, Driscoll spends about an hour and a half just putting guys on the chopping block and beating them over the head over and over and over again. So anyway, so if you want to get shamed by Driscoll over and over and over, go listen to that, okay? Michelle and I were watching one of his sermons on, I don't think it was this one, but it was like a something about husbands and whatever the job was, and man, he was like full on like yelling. I'm like, buddy, relax. But you realize the type of guys that he probably deals with in Seattle and that culture, and just a bunch of, you know, apparently it is the 32-year-old that's living in the basement and doesn't have an ounce of responsibility, is eating ding dongs and, Mom, I'm hungry, you know, or whatever. Go get a job. No. So anyway, all right. So let's keep going. Ruth asks, or Naomi asks in verse 16, how did it go? And she's like, really well, right? Here's the 6 measures of barley. He did not send me home empty-handed. Verse 18, this is Naomi's advice. Much better advice, by the way.
Now these are the verse 18?
18.
Oh, sorry. She replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out. For the man will not rest, but
we'll settle the matter today.
So like, hey, I know the guy's character. This is going to get done quickly. He's going to go meet with this guy, and that's chapter 4, okay? Boaz goes down to meet with the kinsman redeemer that's closer. We don't know who this guy is. He's just a somebody that's a relative, okay? And just notice the story. And this, because of your knowledge of the text, this will a lot will come, okay? Boaz went up to the gate, sat down there, and behold, the close relative whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, turn aside, friend, sit down. And he turned aside to sit down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city, who were where, by the way? At the gate of the city where business is transpired, and said, sit down here. So they sat down. So it's him. It's kinsman redeemer, the first one in line, and it's 10 elders. So what's the impression that you get with this situation?
Boaz wants witnesses.
Yeah, this is official. Like, this is a business agreement. There are elders of the city that are going to witness this conversation, and whatever is decided in these moments, it's official, okay? Now, Boaz is shrewd. He's a smart guy, okay? If you're Boaz and you really want Ruth, how would you try to sell the situation to the guy that has the option to take Ruth?
Make it sound like she's a lot of
baggage. Right. Exactly. Here is her U-Haul. Let me unpack it. Yeah, her mother-in-law, she's a nightmare, right? I mean, you would just walk through everything that's horrible about the situation. He doesn't do that, okay? Watch what he does. He said to her, Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell a piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. Like, hey, what's the first thing he mentions? Land. Like, nice. Okay, she's got to sell it. So I thought to inform you, buy it before those who are sitting here. Let's make an official agreement. You can get this sweet piece of land, okay? And before the elders of my people, if you will redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am after you. So he pitches the land. Like, why would he be doing that? This is odd. He's selling the most valuable commodity that's there, if you will. The land is great. What does the guy say? End of verse 4. Sweet. Like, this is by the coast. That's Carmel. That's mine to buy. I'm in. Great. Okay. You would think Boaz would be crushed, but he's got a plan. Okay. Verse 5. Now he's going to turn the tables a little bit.
Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth, the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property.
Like, it's dead. So you get Naomi. You also get Ruth, the Moabitess, so we make sure to throw that in, right? This, you know, Chemosh worshiping false god, whatever, you know, weirdo god in this gal. So he's not pumping Ruth as like this beautiful young maiden. You're going to get the mother-in-law. You're going to get Ruth, who's a Moabitess. So he paints this situation very differently, okay? Then in verse 6, the closest relative says, I cannot redeem it for myself because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. What does that mean? Potentially, or just like, I can't take care of what I have if I add this land and two more mouths to feed. Like, that's a lot of responsibility. I can't float both those. That's a bad financial decision. I'm going to go into the red if I do that. I'm going to keep what I got, thanks, right? That land would be great, but now you start tacking on two more mouths to feed and clothes and whatever Naomi needs, and I don't want any part of that, and I don't want some Chemosh worshiping girl in my household. Like, Boaz, it's all yours. Yeah, Pete.
What does Driscoll say about this verse? Since, right, you know, right before he's talking about, you know, holding up a woman's integrity and watching, and then he was like, oh yeah, but check this, you know, she's a...
He says that he is shrewd.
Yeah, okay.
He's a smart businessman. What do you notice that, why does Boaz have the upper hand here? What has he done? Do you think he went into this blind and knew nothing about this kinsman redeemer? Mm-hmm. No.
Land first,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
Oh, and you know, to him it was like, oh, I love the land, but then he backed on the U-Haul.
Do you think that he knew a little bit about this guy's financial situation? Mm-hmm. Probably. He's probably done a little bit of homework. Maybe in the midst of their relationship growing, he realized, how does Boaz know that there's another closer kinsman redeemer? Because he cares about being the kinsman redeemer. And he realizes, ew, I'm second in line. Maybe I need to find out a little bit about this guy. Oh, he actually has some fields, he's got some stuff, but he doesn't have what I have. So to take upon all this stuff could financially drain him. So you get the idea that he's just a smart business guy. Why does Boaz have what he has? Because he's a smart business guy, right? He's made a name for himself. He's an older guy. So you get the idea that he's probably done, you know, his background checks. He's pulled the guy's tax return. Okay, this is what he makes. This is what he has. This would tap him. So he paints it in such a way where the guy gets to make the decision, but he's got the upper hand in the conversation the whole time. So he's like, okay, well, if you can't, then I'll go ahead and do it. Okay, so it doesn't even look selfish. It's beautiful, okay? Verse 6, I cannot redeem it for myself because I would jeopardize my inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. So in the presence of 10 elders, they seal the deal. Okay, this is an odd way to seal a deal. Verse 7, read that. So again, think about this. This is a spit and a handshake, you know, old school, maybe in our culture. It's like, okay, we're good. We're good. Spit and shake. Okay. This is a contract that's being signed. Why in this culture a sandal? What did God call Abraham to do when he said, here's the land that I'm going to give you. Go walk it. So your sandal would have been representation of this is where you walk. This is your land. That's how you claim land. You go walk the borders and say, that's mine. So I'm not going to take a bullet for that. But more, I would guess that's probably why the sandal was important. This was my land to redeem. This is my land to go walk on. I'm giving you the rights for you to walk on that land, if you will. Okay? So, I don't know. Like this guy, see the one sandal man now? Like what happened, right? Did he go get another pair of Birkenstocks or Jesus shoes or, right? I don't know. So, yeah.
Did they both exchange sandals or did just Boaz
get I don't know.
The other guy get a sandal.
It seems like the other guy, but.
Boaz probably wore his best sandals too. Like, I want them sandals.
You guys ever heard that story? You guys know Shane Claiborne? You heard that name before? He's a. Anyway, he was a big fan of Mother Teresa, spent time with her in the Calcutta and that sort of thing. And one of the big needs in their ministry was shoes for people, okay? So he went and spoke at Willow Creek Community Church, which has got like 22,000 people, okay? So he gives this message, and he's talking about all this stuff. And at the end of the message, he's talking about the idea that everybody needs shoes. He said, everybody right now, take off your shoes and leave them here. And that was the application of the message. And it wasn't a suggestion. It was, take off your shoes. We just collected 4,000 or 5,000, you know, however many people were there that night, and I'm taking your shoes with you, you know, back to Calcutta. You know, the guys just came from work and they're $400, you know, nice loafers and that, you know, you're like, dang it, I should have changed before I came. But that's what they did. I'm like, man, that's brilliant. So take off your shoes and leave them here. So, yeah. So the guys that came the next night probably got word like, dude, wear your lawn mowing shoes. So, yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, I have lawn mowing shoes. They're like this. Next generation of my shoes that are like about to blow out, and I'm like, okay, those are lawn mowing shoes now. So anyway, so there you go. Okay, that's the idea. 8, the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, and he removed his sandals. So he removed it. I don't know how that worked after that, but that was, I would imagine they probably put their sandals back on, but anyway, okay. Boaz said to the elders, you are witness today that I have bought the land of Naomi, all that belonged to Elimelech, that belonged to Chilon and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance so that the name of the deceased may not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are my witnesses today. So it is official. It is signed, sealed, and delivered. These guys bless him. May you be like Rachel and Leah, meaning have a fruitful womb. May exactly what your hope is, Boaz, be done. They know the character of Boaz, and they pray blessing upon him. And that's the idea, okay? Verse 13, let's kind of watch now the next stage of this relationship. Let's see it culminate. Now remember, what was Ruth's condition at the beginning of this chapter? She was barren. So God now opens her womb, okay? He is blessing this family. The woman said of Naomi, blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name become famous in Israel. Jane, keep going to 15.
He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law who
How cool is that? Like, Naomi gets to take care of this kid. Like, her husband's dead. Her sons are dead. Like, this is the ultimate, like, 180-degree turn in her life. Now she gets to take care of this. I mean, it's just, that's cool, right? Keep going in 17.
The woman living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David.
How about that? Okay, this is the line of David. So King David is coming two generations from here, okay? Jesse is David's dad. Okay, this kid's name is Obed. And then Jesse ultimately is going to give birth to 8 or 9 sons. I forget how many. And now David will be one of those. So this story is going to end up being the line of redemption that the second king of Israel that will sit on the throne. Okay, we get the lineage then in 18 even spelled out with all these other ones. But again, reinforcing that it ends with Obed, verse 22, was born Jesse, and then Jesse, David. Okay, so this kid that is the offspring of now a Moabite woman and an older Israelite man will now be the grandfather of the greatest king that Israel ever has seen. So, cool, redemptive story. So, all right, there you go. Let's stop there for today. So we won't get into, we'll pick up 1 Sam next week. So just for context, 1 Samuel, we're still in a sense, the period of the judges. Okay, we're going to see two more judges in Samuel. One is Eli, who is a judge, and then Samuel is going to be the final judge in Israel. Samuel ultimately is going to die. After him is going to come Saul, the first king of Israel. Okay, so we're still in this season, and we're preparing now ultimately to have a king in Israel. Okay, so we will pick up on that next week. You guys enjoy your weekend. Be safe. Yeah, have fun. And good luck with the car wash Saturday? Tomorrow. Okay. Word. What time are you guys there?
10:00.
Okay. I may try to stop by if I can. I got a bike repair tomorrow. You do? Okay, perfect. Ching, ching. I'll bring the bike repair trailer, my truck. It hasn't been washed in weeks. I've been driving it off-road. Filthy. Yeah, I'll see if I can swing by. That'd be fun. So.